well in your beds.
Because if this thing comes true, there ain't gonna be any more.
It's an elevator. Somebody sent those dents up here to get us. Now, there's no controls inside, but there's maintenance overrides in there. I think I can get it to go down.
I was wrong. We were so wrong. We must leave.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am well.
Excellent, excellent. And the man I was just arguing a technicality with, a man from New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm victorious and fine. Thank you, Phil.
Okay, I'm sure you are. You're lucky we're not in high school still, because then I beat you up. Actually, you probably kicked my ass.
Fight,
but
fight, fight. No, fight.
I would have still fought you, even if
you'd have to reach.
I would just fight you out here. Leaves.
That's right. That's right. Fight, fight, fight. And we have someone from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Hey, everyone, it's Abe. Can you
hear
me?
How's it going? Yes.
Yay.
All right. We had some technical difficulties with both co-host Mike and co-host Abe, but everything looks like we're in fine. For now. Except Mike keeps on harassing about technicalities, which he's wrong. Anyway. I'll let Mike get the last word, and go ahead, Mike.
Phil's always wrong.
You know what they say about technically correct? It's the best kind of correct.
All right, so for folks who are new to the podcast, we are Dark Discussions Podcast. Basically, we discuss and dissect genre films. So examples would be horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno-thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, cult films, midnight movies, and the like. We try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. We do have a website, Eric?
We do. You can find the website at darkdiscussions.com. It is currently in transition, so I can no longer rattle off the layout off the top of my head like I used to be able to. But you should go check it out, because we are transitioning to a full network of podcasts. And you can find many, many other shows on there. Actually, I should check with you, Phil. Is that up and running yet?
Yeah. I've added three a day now. So by this weekend, we should have everybody up. Yep.
Excellent. So there are many more shows to check out and listen to. So take a gander at darkdiscussions.com. We still have a link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com to our Patreon account, which you can also go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For people who'd like to support us financially, we could use the help, because the site redesign costs some cash for Phil. We also need, producing a show isn't free. We have to rent movies and buy equipment and server fees and so on and so forth. So any support is greatly appreciated. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to choose a topic for us to do a show about. We take all the submissions from our patrons, and once a quarter, we draw one at random to do a show about. So you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or find a link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
That's right, and we do have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, or just go to darkdiscussions.com and press contact us. We also have a Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, and we do have a Twitter, Dark Discussion 1. And if you want to send emails to us, please do, and we will read them on the podcast. We also, on the Facebook group, I have a bunch of discussions going on over there that people can join in or start their own discussion. Also, we did get some good news on Twitter this week, where Academy Award nominated screenwriter and director Sean Baker has followed Dark Discussions, as a matter of fact. So he's on board and is now following us on Twitter. And he also liked our release of the Cinema a la Carte episode, Starlet, episode 3 of Cinema a la Carte, which is the film
cool.
that he wrote.
Maybe he'll send me a hate mail for not liking this movie.
Yes, yes. He liked that post. He wrote and directed that film, as a matter of fact. So,
well, and I think for a lot of these people, they just care that they're getting
exposure.
Attention.
Yeah.
And we don't just gallows accepted. We don't just kick the shit out of something that sucks, right? If you know, if we don't like it, we usually have legitimate criticisms. Usually, as to why we don't like it, we just don't say, "Oh, this blows chunks. The director must be a fucking pedophile." You know, we don't do something like that. You know, even if the director might be a pedophile, we try to stick to legitimate beefs with that. So we treat the.
So what Mike is saying is he's pro pedophile.
I'm just saying I think you have to use that when it's relevant.
Right, like Roman Polanski.
Right, I don't think, yeah. So we deal with what the problem is with the film or what our issues are with the film in a relatively mature manner. Again, gallows accepted. You know, and so if we're giving it a fair shake, and that's all you can ever ask. And we're usually pretty clear about, which often happens when a film is competently made, like, for example, Skyman, and just not the thing we wanted to see.
Sure, no, that's a fair point. And for Starlet, that's actually one of my favorite movies in the past 10 years, for sure. I love that film; it's absolutely phenomenal, in my opinion. But like Mike said, you know, even Eric, who may have not enjoyed that film, he has to admit that it was well made and so forth, similar to like Mike just mentioned, Skyman.
I admit nothing.
Fair enough. we actually try to a lot of times. Not all the films that we view, we go in blind. So usually, unless we go in blind and the movie just is something that none of us liked, one of us has usually at least seen it. And
but how do we see it if we're going in blind?
That is one of the best jokes Abe has ever made.
Sean Baker, that was kind of cool. And whatnot. So I wonder if he'll listen to the episode. And if he does, I hope he comments and lets us know what he feels. All right. So I don't think we have any news that we need to talk about. If we do, we can talk about it at the end of the episode after we discuss our topic, because some of our listeners, like Pam, by the way, it is August 27th, 2020, we're recording this, prefers to get right into the film. So with that stated, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about the, sorry, I forgot which, Dave Franco film, The Rental.
Let me show you out back, and then I'll get out of your hair.
The stars are insane out here.
I should have brought the telescope.
What do you need a telescope in the city for? Unless you're like a peeping Tom or something.
Soon, I promise.
not okay, Charlie, all right? Stop being so calm.
Everything is fine.
That's right, Dave Franco, Portuguese-American, the brother of James Franco, as a matter of fact. He co-wrote this with Joe Swanberg. Joe Swanberg is one of the biggest indie directors out there in the mumblecore and various horror things. He's friends with all those guys like Simon Barrett and the guy that who's the guy that's doing the next Godzilla there? I forget the guy's name.
Adam Wainwright?
Yeah, no. Adam Wingard.
Wingard.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so all these guys are friends with Adam Wingard. So Joe Swanberg is one of Adam Wingard's good buddies, and he co-wrote this film with Dave Franco, the brother of James Franco.
Is this the same Dave that made Amaze?
It is not.
No, different Dave.
The film is basically only has five people in it. Dan Stevens, probably best known for speaking of Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett, The Guest, which I believe that's their film. So it's not surprising that Stevens is in this film since he's buddies with Joe Swanberg. Also,
Phil, just to mention this because it was fairly recent on Netflix, he was also in Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga.
What is that, Joe?
It's a comedy with Will Ferrell, right. And he's very funny in it.
Gotcha.
And he also plays the lead character David in the FX series Legion.
Oh, okay.
Which I highly recommend. It was made by the same showrunner who did Fargo. It is trippy.
I've heard that's a show you cannot watch while playing on your phone.
You can. You might not follow it any better, but.
He was also in the Liam Neeson film, A Walk Among the Tombstones, which is a pretty solid film from a couple of years ago. Also, Alison Brie, who's pretty big. I'm really not too familiar with her, though a lot of
Phil,
people are big fans. Yes.
I got to be honest. I cannot believe you have not watched Glow.
I have not watched Glow.
If there's any one person that I know that said, would they like Glow? It would be, Phil Perrin would love Glow.
Hot chicks and spandex, I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't watched it. But I know she was also in Mad Men, but I haven't seen any of those. But she has also been listed as one of the most desirable women in Hollywood by various magazines, which is kind of interesting.
She was in Mad Men. She was in where she got her start, I think, was in Community by Dan Harmon, who also does the animated series Rick and Morty and Glow and Mad Men. Those are the three big things that she did. She's done other stuff too.
So both Dan Stevens and Alison Brie are affiliate lower bigger actors in the indie or lower or TV crowd. Right. So I would
say they're up and coming and now getting to be well known.
Yeah, and yeah, if I read correctly, she basically got this job by sleeping with the director.
Her husband?
Dave Franco? Does that make it right somehow?
is she married to Dave Franco, is what you're saying?
Supposedly, yes.
Okay, fair enough. So both Dan Stevens and Alison Brie from Cronyism and Nepotism. How about that? Anyway,
when you're making a low budget film, cronyism and nepotism really goes a long way.
It does. It does. Yes. Yes. And then we have Sheila Vand, Jeremy Allen White, and Toby Huss, and a pug. And so those are the six stars, a pug and five people.
Just to note it, because of the people that listen to our show, I've not seen the movie, but Sheila Vand was also in A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Oh, that was her, the lead?
Okay. Mm,
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I saw like 20 minutes of it, and it was too art house for me. So
it is a very art house film. It is a very well shot art house film. but it is an art house film. So
yeah, so I can't say if it was good or not, but the 15
Fair
minutes.
So I'm just guessing that there's some people listening to the show that may have seen it and enjoyed it and would like to know the connection.
The pug got tired.
I would concur. There are a number of folks that do like that film. All right, so that's pretty much it I got here. It's by the IFC film, which is usually a good thing. And it was released July 24th everywhere on VOD. And it did one month of a drive-in. In Vineland Drive-In, it says, which is somewhere out in California. So I guess we can – it had 1.9 million box office from the drive-in. So I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. And I will start, I guess. I actually heard about this film from Eric. He said it was pretty solid. He pretty much saw it the first week it came out on VOD. And so I decided to watch it 2 to 3 days later because he suggested that – or he said that it was pretty good. And so, yeah, me and my wife watched it. I had to see the trailer, which is a no-no usually for me. But when I watch films with my wife, I'm forced to watch trailers because that helps my wife decide, because I don't really get to decide what film we watch. I just recommend them.
Happy life, right?
Yes, exactly. So I recommend the films, and she says, well, let me read the blurb and see the trailer. So this one passed the test. It almost didn't, but it did pass the test after we couldn't find anything else, and we went back to it. So, yeah, I watched it with her. It was a pretty good film. I enjoyed it a lot. This is a great thriller/horror film, kind of slasher, kind of thriller type thing. All the characters except the pug and Allison Brie's character are, and even the landlord, he was all right. But three of the four renters are, I couldn't stand them, and I was just waiting for them to die. So this is one of those films that if you're like slashes, you're there, die, die, die. So we'll discuss whether or not that actually works out. But all in all, very good film. I would have bought it because right now you can buy it for $9.99 VOD, but at the time that me and Eric watched it, it was $6.99 rental and you could not buy it. So yeah, big thumbs up for me. It was an enjoyable film. Let's go with you, Abe.
So I heard about it because I saw the, you know, in our conversations on Messenger, when we usually discuss trying to figure out what we want to watch. And that was what we decided on. So the rental is a rental on Amazon. I sat down to watch it today, just getting my fresh my mind because I've been busy with work. Don't want to forget anything. And it's an okay film. I wasn't exactly enthralled with much of it. I kind of with Phil that I didn't understand most of the characters. So that kind of and. A large portion of the film is kind of to spend time with these characters and their relationships, and I wasn't really interested in any of them and didn't really care for them. I mean, and then it's that kind of makes it a little bit of a drag when you're in a horror film. I did kind of like there was a mix between a sort of a story about keeping secrets and a covering up a murder, while you have also another subgenre, which is kind of a spoiler, because it kind of becomes more clear toward the end of the film, versus a large portion of it, in fact. It's almost like, how should I say, plays out in some way how From Dusk Till Dawn plays out like it's a gangster crime movie, and then shifts into a horror genre. This kind of goes from almost a thriller to more of a slasher at the end. It's an interesting attempt, but it's not a film I would revisit. I didn't hate it. I just wasn't really all that, you know, entertained by it. I didn't think it was well shot. And the performances were good, and overall, I mean, I think there are people who will like this film. I don't think I myself would recommend it. But that's going to be depending on, you know, certain people. So yeah, that's, those are just my thoughts.
All right, very good. And let's go with you, Mike.
Yeah, I first heard about this because Phil said we're doing the rental as if I knew what it was supposed to be. I was like, okay, I had no idea what the movie was, never heard of it before, but apparently we were doing it. So I did it. And I watched it today, and I thought it was very okay. I think if I had a problem with it, it's that it's a 100-minute movie, a little bit under that, and almost half of the film is basically feels more like a relationship drama, you know, than really any kind of a horror film or thriller, or however you want to classify this as. And, you know, again, if depending on what you're in the mood for, that may not be a bad thing. So it is kind of slow burn until it's not. And I'm just not really into those kind of relationship-y type of films. So, again, which is where it spends about 45 minutes. 45 minutes is where the dog thing happens, and as Phil has already pointed out, because it, you know, even though spoiler warnings weren't up, the dog does survive, so nothing terrible happens to the dog, at least not that we see.
Spoiler!
But, yeah, other than that, that's kind of where things start to really click into place. But it does take a while to get there, and I was kind of bored getting there. And I think once you get there, yeah, then I think it amps up the tension pretty – it escalates pretty quickly. I think you can question the logic of what the characters are doing in some cases, but you're also talking about people under pressure. You know, we've had this conversation many times in the past. And there's always people say, well, this is stupid. Why'd they do that? It's because they're in a bad situation and they're panicking, and panicky people make bad choices. We see that a lot. We're kind of seeing that playing out right now on the news. So that part, I guess I kind of like the second half more than I like the first half. And that just comes down to a personal preference for me. I think there's some people who really dig the first half because they're going to be into all that. I think you use the frame Bumblecore kind of stuff. I didn't hate the characters necessarily, although I do think that there is a message here that I'm sure Eric Webster probably has said once or twice in the past.
Something about people suck.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. Because it is very much about how all of this is because people are kind of being dickish to each other in a lot of different ways. I think the only one that really kind of gets off well is probably Alison Brie.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I'm forgetting something about her being dickish. But, you know, we'll get into that when we get into the...
Okay. So what about you, Eric?
I got wind of this movie because... I watched that movie I mentioned on Netflix with Will Ferrell, I thought that Dan Stevens' character in that movie was very funny, but I didn't recognize him because he's in a ridiculous costume. So I looked it up. I was like, oh yeah, that's him. Oh, he was in The Guest. So I watched The Guest again. So he was on my brain when I saw an article about this movie floating around somewhere, and so I caught it the day it came out. I really enjoyed this movie. I don't mind the drama, as long as it's done well, which I thought this was. And I understand what Abe is saying in his comparison to Dusk to Dawn. I didn't feel it was quite as abrupt as that movie, but I understand the comparison. And I like this movie a lot. So I would recommend it, but I understand what Abe and Mike are saying about the slow first half.
Sure. And also I have to agree with Mike, the characters and Abe too. The characters are generally unlikable.
I watched this movie with Dan and Susie, and 15 minutes into the movie, Dan turns to me and goes, "I hate all these people, and I hope they die."
You know what is funny about that quote? That's the exact same quote I said when I looked over to my wife and I said the exact same thing. I hate all these people and I hope they die.
I know. That's why I started laughing hysterically when he said it. He was like, what? I was like, that's what Phil said.
Just to be clear, Phil, I said I didn't hate them at first.
No, Abe didn't like them that much. Is what I mean.
Right.
So it was really, I
liked them less as the film went on.
Yeah, sure. That's fine. And to be honest, even if you said you hated him right from the beginning, I'd actually like you more, Mike. So it's nothing to be ashamed of or clarify, except for the listeners.
I don't want you putting words in my mouth. That's all.
That's fine. I prefer not to put words in your mouth anyway. All right. So, Eric, do we have a wiki for this?
Wiki. All right. Two couples rent a vacation home for what should be a celebratory weekend getaway. Doesn't that sound nice?
And that's it. That's the
that's it.
That is so bare bones.
Yeah,
that's cool with me. I'd rather do it that way than the other way.
Well, except the only problem with that being that there's no way to tell what kind of movie this is, because happens is it a wacky sex comedy? You know, is it a
Well, except for right under the title, it says horror, comma thriller.
Yeah, but
right.
I'm just saying it could tell
you more. But if you see the word the rental and read that wiki and know nothing else about the film,
I'm not a fan of that particular. I saw a better one. I don't know where I saw it though, but it was it mentioned that they rent this place and have a conflict with the creepy guy that rented it to them. Worded better than that, but I think that's a better one because it gives you a little bit of an idea.
Right. And well, I mean, by the way, another movie that was listed as a horror movie or thriller, Dave Made a Maze.
Yes.
That was a horror movie. I don't think it was.
Which one was this?
Dave Made a Maze. I said that I thought was listed on horror.
That's true.
Let's move on.
I'm just saying,
it was listed as horror.
Let's move on.
Sure. All right, sounds good. So I guess we can talk about general things about the film. This before we throw up the spoiler alert, but this film definitely started getting buzz, and not because of people on Facebook, but because it's a Dave Franco and he was and Alison Brie and all that. It was getting noticed, similar to say that the We Summon the Darkness film from a couple of months ago, just for the fact that who's involved. So it was getting some notice. It's actually getting acceptable review, 74%, I think, on Rotten Tomatoes. Richard Roper gave it 3.5 stars. RogerEbert.com gave it 3 out of 4 stars. So it's getting pretty decent reviews and whatnot. I haven't seen many people talking about it on Facebook, but as we've discovered, like 1BR, no one really talked about that until it got on Netflix, and now everybody's talking about it this week because it's on Netflix. So a lot of people don't really rent as much films as we think they do,
right?
Or go to theaters.
A lot of people wait until it's on a streaming service they already pay for.
Yeah. So it'll be curious to see what the crew on Facebook that are in the horror podcast and horror website pages will say about this film when it makes it to VOD free.
I would think the biggest name here is probably Alison Brie. But I think if you pay attention to Alison Brie's career, there is not a lot of overlap with the horror genre. So I have a feeling this is bringing people in who are not used to watching movies like this. You know, where we are. And so I don't know that I saw anything like fresh or new with this, but it could very well be like the Alison Brie crowd. You know, they haven't watched a horror movie since 1987. It may be a little bit more shocking or new to them.
Right. And what was the film in 1987 that she was in? That was a horror film or whatever year.
She was probably in kindergarten. I have no idea. I don't think she was. I'm just pulling it. You know, I said a horror film.
Gotcha. I see what you're saying.
Because she mostly does.
Right, fair enough. Yeah.
And Mad Men.
All right.
She's also let me verify this before I say it out loud. She was in a movie that is on Netflix called Horse Girl, which I started to watch at one point and had to abandon for some reason. I can't remember why, but it's very drama-y and surreal.
Oh, especially whacked. Yeah. And that got a lot of buzz because she was like completely naked in that film and all the people were talking about it on Netflix.
That part.
Yeah, I heard about it. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I didn't even know who the woman was until this film. This
is my actual Google
first,
alert.
That's the first time I actually heard of her was because of that film and everybody was talking about her nude scene because I guess she was already pretty big and like I said, all those magazines were saying she's desirable or something. But I had no idea who she was. This is the first film I've actually ever seen her in. Though the horse, whatever, what's it called again?
Horse girl.
Yeah, that still seems
horse face. No, that's Sarah Jessica Parker. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
That film sounded interesting because of the surrealness to it. So I was thinking of checking it out. I just never have. Anything else that anybody wanted to bring up that was generally related to the film, not that is spoilery or anything?
For a slasher film, it's very low key on the violence.
Yep.
I understand why you want to call it a slasher, but I can't call it a slasher myself.
Well, I mean,
I know where you're coming from, though.
Yeah, I mean,
you got a guy in a mask who doesn't say anything. You see a lot of stuff from his point of view. Wanders around, picks people off one at a time.
The one that says the guy with the knives on his finger isn't a slasher, so I'm not going to listen to you.
He kills people in his dreams. He's supernatural.
He has knives on his fingers.
Which he rarely uses to kill people.
Now, what was your point? What was your point?
I can understand how Eric can't really see it as a slasher, but I kind of see it. But even for, you know, a horror film, it's very low-key on the violence. You know, it's mostly, I mean, there is some pretty gruesome moments here and there, but they're not as
it's not gory.
Not gory, yes.
Yeah.
It's not like it tried to display it in all, you know, like, you know, traditional slasher films of the 1980s and stuff like that.
Yeah, a lot of the violence is implied rather than explicit.
Yeah, there's like one thing that I would consider to be a classic kill. And that's about it.
Yeah,
involving a hammer.
It's you know, it's mostly about. I would say the biggest part of terror is the fragmentation of the relationships, because that's where.
I felt that the terror was the pug dead or not.
The pug was the most likable character.
Absolutely.
All right. Shall we throw out the spoiler flag?
Yeah, we probably should.
All right.
Spoiler flag is up. From here on out, we will be discussing any aspect of the movie. If you would like to see it unspoiled, go do that now and come back and listen to the rest of this later.
Yep, there you go. All right, so basically, just to set it up, it's this guy and a woman own some sort of computer company, and one of them, the man is married, and the woman is actually dating the man's brother. And after having a breakthrough at the computer company, they decide to celebrate a little bit after, like, working those computer crappy hours that Eric and myself know we have to do every so often. And so they decide to rent a fancy oceanfront house on the coast of the Pacific Ocean, not a beach type place, but more of a like a cliff type house. And that's pretty much the setup of the thing, right? The four of them are heading up.
And yeah, they're in Oregon. Their car license plate is Oregon, so we're assuming they're somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. Uh-huh. We don't know where the house actually is.
It's definitely the Pacific Ocean.
I just assumed it was. For some reason, I thought it was California, but you probably that makes sense. That's Oregon. Yeah.
Well, it could have been Oregon. It could be Northwest, Northern California. It could have been
Washington.
Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
I mean, not Canada, because it was much too nice for that.
Right. Oh, speaking of Canada, Facebook deleted one of my posts and said it was against their regulations. Basically, that pizza meme that Mike put up, Barrett, sometime co-host Barrett, wrote that actually I've had pretty good pizza up in Buffalo, New York, where I grew up. And I wrote, that's too bad because Buffalo, New York is too close to Canada. And that was enough that I got an offensive tweet. An offensive remark.
We know who reported you, don't we?
I think we do.
We do.
I think they might be Ginger.
Could be a Ginger. Could be could be a fiery Ginger from up in the Northern Territories.
So I had to repost.
Member of the dog family.
You're too close to a place that I won't name, but I think you know what I'm talking about. And that one passed. So it's like ridiculous. While other people are saying, I wish you were dead and you should all burn in hell and die and kill and all this other stuff.
That's okay.
Like, yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
Well, it's anyway, because of that rash of anti-Canadian violence we've been having. And they didn't want to spur on further problems.
That's really funny because I specifically posted something earlier today totally making fun of Canada. And I haven't heard a thing about it.
My post made fun of almost every state in the United States except for New York and New Jersey.
Right.
And somehow that got through, but Phil making a comment about Canada, that's delicious.
Well, that's international.
Right. And I could, but I didn't even say anything bad. All I said was, unfortunately, it's too close to Canada. I could have been talking about their weather. And
you know
there.
What? They probably have Canada tagged as a bad word.
Canada.
You used the C word, Phil.
Yes, I did. That's a good point, Mike. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah, because I don't so for back to this. They just got triggered by the C word. That was it.
Anyway, so
and from now on, that is how we should be referring to that particular nation state.
Nation state.
America's hat. The C word.
Wow.
All right. So let's get back to this film here. There were no Canadians in this film. There was an Englishman because Stevens is English. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, at least the five stars. They're all Americans except for
what
Stevens.
What about the pug?
What about the key grip?
Well, I'm talking about the star. Like,
I'm just posting
like
your balls.
All four. Sheila Band, Allison Brie, and so they're all Americans. Anyway, no Canadians. All right, so let's see. That's pretty much the setup of the film. They go to this rental property. Like you said, Mike, it's probably Oregon because you saw the license plates. And that's it. There you go.
Well, and here's the thing, is that some of the people in this movie are unlikable, and I'm not going to argue with anybody that says they're unlikable, because they are. There was one of the characters, Mina, she's upset because she thinks the guy that rented them the house is racist, because she tried to book it for the same days, and... was denied, and then later the guy booked it under his name and got it for the same dates. So she thinks that the guy is a racist because she has a Middle Eastern name and he didn't want to rent it to a Middle Eastern person. So she's all upset about this, but here's my problem with her take on this whole thing, is that like it becomes such an issue for her. But if it was such a big deal to her, why did she get in the fucking car and go up there? Because she's like being all passive aggressive to this dude and making a federal case out of it. And is she wrong? Probably not. But if she was...
I'm saying she's wrong.
I don't know. She might have a thing. But is it appropriate for her to act the way she did? No. No, it's kind of not. If you had a problem with it, you should have just stayed at home rather than come on the trip and antagonize the guy who's renting you the house.
Yeah.
Right. I agree. I felt she was completely out of line. If she thought that was the case, they just should have canceled and not even gone.
Exactly.
And instead, they decided to go.
Yeah.
Right. And then she basically puts the other three people in a situation by causing problems with the landlord or the landlord's brother, and not only insults him by basically saying, calling him white trash because, you know, he's dressed whatever, and she goes, "This is your place," like as if you could afford it.
Uh-huh.
And then he comes up with a great, great one liner back. But the point is that it was, she was way out of line. I just immediately was like, okay, I don't like any of these people.
a lot of the characters have a lot of issues. Josh has some serious anger issues. Michelle can't seem to control her substance abuse. Charlie actually, you know, talks about his brother behind his back, you know, being like, you know, mean is too good for him and stuff like that. There's a lot of shittiness amongst his people, but they always try to keep it under cover in some way.
Yeah, but saying like you're someone's too good for your brother, that seems like typical brother talking shit about your brother stuff.
But
he ended up talking his brother into trouble, but I don't think that was ever his intent. He just kind of he was trying to say a thing and ended up saying something else that he wouldn't even be thinking about that caused the girlfriend to make connections that he probably had never really considered.
I also didn't get the substance abuse angle that Abe just mentioned, because the way I thought everything was going down is that everybody was surprised that Goody Two Shoes Michelle came up with the drugs.
Well, I
wouldn't call it substance abuse, Abe. It was more of like recreational usage. It wasn't really abuse, I don't think.
Yeah, but I thought she was being irresponsible with it because, you know, she completely, you know, her only, you know, because she decides to use it as a way to try to pretty much block out everybody else when they're not up to getting high with her the next day.
No, it was, the problem is she was saving it for the next day. And
her friend pressured her, the other woman pressured her into bringing it out the first night.
Mina pressured her to bring it out the first night. She was trying to say, you know, save it for after the walk
after because the hike,
because she knew that if they did it the night before, that they wouldn't be in a good shape for it. And
no one would be able to do it. And she was right. Exactly.
She was right. If annoying.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was also because the other two of them had actually a dirty secret, and they were too upset to go out with their friends.
That could be part of it. I thought their decision not to go on a hike was mainly based on their physical state from having overdone it the night before, but that's just my take.
Yeah, because they went on and had something. They had a fling and even stayed up later than everybody else as well. And so, yeah, it was pretty bad. And then also, it's back to the landlord thing. He actually said that dozens of people put in for the thing each month or each weekend, and they have to just pick one person, you know, and it just happened to be.
Well, you're assuming he's telling the truth.
Yeah, exactly. And why not?
Because then he's saying that I didn't pick you because I didn't want to pick.
No, but why wouldn't you give him why wouldn't you give him the benefit of the doubt?
I think the reason for that, Phil, is because she submitted her request like an hour before he did, and she got rejected, and then later he got accepted. So it's the timing.
Right.
Oh, and don't get me wrong. Yeah. There are all sorts of reasons that could have happened. Like they may have given it to someone else, and that person could have canceled.
Right, exactly.
So there are other possibilities.
We used to have a... Oh, go on, Mike. Continue.
And she handled it poorly by making an issue of it and that leads to further problems.
She made an assumption and decided to make an issue out of that assumption.
Right. No, now the only thing that I would say was a little bit of a telling comment later is when he shows up later, he says, asked where the white girl is.
Yeah, but that was intentional because he had already been called white trash by her.
Well, he didn't. Maybe not, because he wasn't speaking to her at the time.
Everybody in this movie is an asshole.
And it was a bit later. So
I'm a dark white guy, and if someone called me something, believe me, I'd be riding that person all the way until they're out of there. So I can't blame that white trash.
Aren't you Argentinian?
That's my point, exactly. So I can't blame the quote unquote white trash guy for riding those people until they got the fuck out, because he was already insulted.
You're an employee. You're responsible for taking the money. That's about it.
I agree she did not handle the situation appropriately, but I don't think her suspicion is incorrect.
I think it's a matter of supposition based on the audience, and I don't think we have nearly enough information. I'm just saying.
That's,
we can make a lot of guesses, but the main point is it's supposed to plant the seeds of distrust amongst them. So when conflict arises, everyone can, you know, because the guy's off this, the man Taylor is set up to be a red herring.
Right. Yeah.
And this is, but really, it's the lack of trust among everybody and the lack of communication among everyone.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That is what really creates the problem. And, I mean, honestly, the first shot of the film, I think it was the first shot of the film, where you have Charlie and Mina sitting over the next to each other on the computer. I had began thinking that they were a couple.
When they're looking at the house on the computer,
yes,
she's kind of draped on his shoulder in a very girlfriend-like manner.
Absolutely.
So
and she's saying, we want to do this, we want to do that. And then her boyfriend shows up, and I was like, what? Or her husband, whatever.
We had to rewind, me and my wife, because we were confused. We thought are they brother and sister? For a second, we thought they were brother and sister. And then we thought they were dating. And then this other guy comes in, and it's like, who's related to who and what? And
so the whole dynamic is a little weird.
Yeah, especially at the beginning when you're introduced to the characters without knowing their, like other movies that would do it, even though it's kind of weak, it works, where they say, hey, you may be my brother, but you can't do this. Or you may be my partner, and it's obvious they're saying it so the audience knows. But
yeah,
they didn't do
that.
Within
the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And at that point, I wanted all of them to die anyway, so it didn't matter.
Well, but my point is that they are setting up what is going to come later, right?
I was about to make the same point, yes.
Yeah. I think that confusion on the part of the audience, I think, is very intentional.
It kind of almost sounds to what Michelle says. The last thing she says to Charlie was, who are you? It's like, because I don't even think Charlie knows.
And she's right. She married a monster.
Right with a question.
She didn't even know.
Well, they weren't married.
Michelle and Charlie were married. Yeah, they were husband and wife.
I thought it was Josh and Mina that were married.
I think they're dating.
No, Charlie
and Michelle
Charlie
were married,
and
Mina and Josh married. Are dating.
Oh, okay,
because Mina helped Josh turn his life around.
And Charlie is banging Mina. And the whole thing is disgusting because not only are they having an affair, but they're having an affair with the brothers and the brother-in-law's girlfriend.
Well, they aren't having an affair at the start.
Characterizing that a little bit, Phil. I think saying they're having an affair is putting too much intent and importance on it. They got high on drugs and had sex once.
Well, it appears they had it in the past too. I think, right?
No, they say in the film it happened once; it can never happen again.
All right. Let's say that. Yeah, you're right, Eric. When people are under the influence of a substance, they do things that they wouldn't necessarily do, but it's still pretty gross. I mean, I don't know.
I mean,
how
if you
many,
want to say they cheated, yes, they absolutely cheated. But to me, saying it had an affair makes it sound like an ongoing thing, which it was not.
And and again, it was a thing before the film started.
I meant a semantic. You're right. It was a semantical mistake. I meant to say they cheated, and it was disgusting that they would cheat. Specifically based not only in the house with their significant others in the house with them, but one is the brother, and it's just so gross. It was the whole
thing. It was pretty shady. Disgusting.
Yeah. It made me want to vomit. It was like more. I was like at that point, I was saying, I hope they all die.
And you know, for the first part of it, when I was watching it, I thought it was going to be a scenario which everyone would kill each other.
Oh. That would be interesting.
But why would those two having an affair want all of them to die?
Because he already hated.
Well, I already hated Josh, and I already hated Mina. At that,
why did you hate Josh?
Why did I hate Josh? I know why. I hated Charlie because of what Josh told Michelle about Charlie. And then I didn't like Josh because he was talking about his brother. You know, that stuff you don't talk about. And then Mina because of what she did to the landlord. And Michelle I liked, even though she was the other girl that kind of screwed up Charlie's prior relationship. So they all were like, it's people I wouldn't want to be hanging out with.
Again, I think that what happened with Josh, I don't think that was intentional. He wasn't trying to fuck up the relationship. And as far as Michelle goes, Michelle thought that, who was the character? Jen. Michelle thought he was done with Jen when they got together. He didn't realize there was still a thing.
Again.
Right. Charlie lied. To her, you're right. That's
right.
True.
Yeah, but so I don't think the intent was there.
Like that. I mean, I didn't really hate Josh until he went psycho, but I didn't like Josh because his history showed that he was a loser.
Well, that's being judgmental.
Yeah, you're damn right. It is. Phil's a judgmental kind of guy.
Especially when it comes to characters in a movie, a horror movie, because most of them are scumbags. So So I didn't like his character because he basically all the things that his brother was saying about him to Michelle, and Michelle was defending him, saying, well, at least he's trying to get his life back together and blah, 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 blah. And that's fair. So I didn't really hate Josh until he went psycho. And then Michelle, I never really hated. It was really only, I hated Mina almost immediately. And then I hated Charlie pretty quick too, especially after the cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were just all annoying.
Yeah, and then Charlie was unlikable because, the cheating, and also I thought just like I almost thought that what he was saying about his brother that was worse than his brother talking to Michelle about his past. Because like
you're
he
right.
was just
yeah,
really
he,
cut
he
his
was,
brother down.
Oh, yeah.
He's your fucking brother.
Again, we don't know enough about their backstories, but you know, maybe the brother did something even worse, but you're right. It was pretty rude. He wouldn't even concede to his wife that, yeah, you're right. At least he's trying to make amends and he's trying to get back to, you know, being responsible. You know, you're right. He was just like, I'm a business owner. I'm smart. And my brother's a fuck up. Fuck him.
Like, there's moments like when he brings up, talks about certain facts and stuff like that and tries to quiz his brother on the spot. Make him look stupid.
Yeah.
Right. And it's stupid because I mean,
I definitely could not relate to that having an older brother that went to MIT. I don't know anything about that.
But you know, it comes down to I mean, the thing, it was stupid too because here's a guy. You know, it's like if you're going to talk about computers and your brother's not in the computer field, it's like so he doesn't know computers because he's not in the computer field. You know, it's like if Eric, you know, you're in the music stuff. You know a lot about music. If I tried to, besides, you know, actual talk about sounds and the keys and all this other stuff, and I didn't know it, I shouldn't know because I don't study that stuff.
Right.
So
it doesn't mean you're
of.
Stupid. It just means you don't know that.
Right. Exactly. Right. And Charlie was being like he was super smart when it had nothing to do with him being super smart. It had to do with he was in the field and his brother wasn't.
Right.
So basically what we're all saying is these characters suck.
Yeah.
Sure. Except for Michelle.
Yeah, Michelle
was actually, yeah, this,
and the dog.
She was actually the smart dog. One. She was actually the smart one.
Yeah,
you know, she was actually trying to be on the path of reason, but everybody else was just so stuck in making worse decisions, made things worse and worse. And you know, she didn't want any part of it because no one would listen to her.
Yeah, Michelle benefits by the fact that she did the right thing, and that when it comes time to do the right thing. She's on drugs.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. The only thing I will say negative about Michelle, and I say this about anybody who is married or dates a piece of garbage, is they're suspect because they're married or dating a piece of garbage. However,
she didn't know it was a piece of garbage until they got there.
You're right. So I can't really say anything bad about her. I liked her character a lot. Obviously, the drugs was a little ridiculous, but again, that was part of the plan. They were planning to take the drugs together, as you know, just for fun, whatever, dance or whatever they're going to do. And they fucked it up because they wanted to do it the night before, even though they had a plan to all go hiking, like 5 miles to this waterfall, and. The other three, or at least the other two, the Nina and Charlie, screw the whole thing up because they decide to take
drugs. So many
and Charlie, ways. And, well, and you know what? You can see Nina fucking up because she's has no relation to Michelle or Charlie except for being a business partner. But for Charlie to say, "You're right, honey, I'll wait with you tomorrow," he should have done that, and he didn't. He was a dink.
Yeah, they were all kind of fucked Michelle on that whole deal. That was not very cool.
No, not at all.
Charlie, you know, made it sound like, you know, as long as she stayed on the sidelines, it wouldn't affect her. But you know, Michelle will be, you know, cursed with the knowledge that you know she was there. You know,
right?
Because she, you know, he says to her, you know, you didn't do anything. It's not your fault, but you know, I think you know it's because she didn't do anything is what makes her so feel so guilty, because she's just kind of stepping aside and letting these guys do this. You know, it's just like it sounds like Josh will go to jail, but you know he made a decision to go in there and beat the son of the fella.
Well, and really, she's kind of at fault, too, for caving. Because, like, she should have just, when Mina said, "Why don't you get the drugs out?" She should have been like, "No, that's for tomorrow." Right.
It is a, right. But as things go, that is major hindsight.
Right.
Yeah, right. Also, I now remember another reason why I didn't like Josh. Or the main reason. Because this is a horror film, and there's a dog. The dog dies, and he brought the dog when they weren't supposed to bring the dog. The rental
that
said no.
That is a terrible
pets.
Reason to hate a character.
No pets allowed. He was going
to
kill
unreasonable
the
unreasonable when it comes to dogs.
Well,
it's not a reasonable because he didn't know he was in a horror film. If they knew they were in a horror film, none of them would have went.
But either way, he should not have brought the dog because the dog, the pets weren't allowed. You just put the dog in a doggy hotel for a week. You know, it's not a big deal.
It's not like when you wake up in the morning.
But then you would have hated him for abandoning the dog.
No, sir. We do it all the time. When I go to Maine or Connecticut or wherever, we put the dog in the doggy hotel for the couple of times.
They allow dogs in Maine and Connecticut.
Anyway.
Oh, Lordy.
No, but either way, if you go to if you rent a property where you're not supposed to bring pets, you don't bring pets.
Was it made clear to them?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the whole rule.
It was a rule, but when they showed up with the dog, they said no dogs allowed.
No, they left, they got into an argument about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was like, "Don't bring the dog; they're not allowed." And he was like, "Well, we'll hide it until he goes away."
Well, I'm saying, but weren't they already there with the dog?
No,
I mean, it was too. By that point, they were leaving.
They were about to leave. Right, his brother was already in the car with the dog.
Right, I'm just saying it was a little late to make arrangements.
True.
Right, but he knew that you weren't supposed to bring the dog, and he decided to.
I'm saying, did they know before then?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. They all knew. Yes, it was a big argument, as Eric said.
Anyway,
yeah. In other words, what we're saying is these people suck.
Just like everybody else.
All right, so let's get to the heart of the situation. So they go through the get there, get to the rental, have the little confrontation with the guy. They realize it's a beautiful night. They could have brought their telescope, and they didn't. And so Taylor, the maybe racist brother who takes care of the place, says he could bring them their telescope. They go out for a walk. They come back later. The telescope's in the house, and Amita and Mina's all like, "Oh God, you know, isn't that creepy?"
I was like, "No, it's not that creepy."
No,
he said he was going to do it.
No.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like the housekeeper at the hotel. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just that she's one of these people. She's made up her mind, and no facts are going to change it. Otherwise, she's going to look for facts to get in the way of her anger. Yes. Exactly.
Right. I was just waiting for her to be thrown off the cliff at this point. I was like, get off the cliff already. Die.
Right.
Oh, he's dying.
So anyway, so they have the party. Everyone except Michelle does drugs. And
Michelle goes to bed early.
Right. And Charlie and Mina having a liaison in the shower, which is the thing that sort of starts everything rolling downhill. That creates a tension, you know, but we aren't in horror movies.
Oh, that's right. They banged twice, right? Yeah, you know, they banged in the hot tub, too, I think. Yeah.
I don't know if they actually did it in the hot tub, but that's where the whole thing started.
Right. So. So basically, they have an affair. Let me rephrase it. I keep on saying affair. They have a fling.
They boink, though. Boink is the term.
Yeah. They boink in.
Boinking.
In the shower for sure, and maybe in the hot tub, and they're not supposed to because one's married and one's dating the brother. So it's kind of gross. Now, Eric did make a point that they were under the influence of mushrooms or whatever the hell it was. Ecstasy.
I think.
Yeah. Right. And whatnot. But still, that's not no excuse, just as it's not an excuse to drive while you're under the influence. So, yeah, they were bad.
They were naughty.
Yeah. So
punished.
Was it a real life or was it just ecstasy?
I think they were probably horny for each other anyway. I mean, they were to the point where they've worked for so long together that they knew each other to the point where they saw each other as attractive and whatnot. So the ecstasy just. Their inhibitions.
And this becomes a problem because the next day they're both not feeling well and also probably feeling not good about what happened, and they don't go on the hike. And Josh and Michelle go on together. And they have the little, Charlie and Mina have the little thing saying, well, boy, that was a mistake. That can never happen again, and we shall never speak of it again. And we're like, that's fair. All right, that's at least, you know, a thing. But then the problem is that Mina sees that there's a camera in the shower.
Right.
Dun, dun, dun.
Or the aforementioned boinking occurred.
Right, and if they were normal, decent human beings who didn't fuck each other like animals in the shower the night before... they could have gone to the police.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're afraid, but now they don't want to get caught, so they can't go to the police. And so Charlie convinces Mina, just, nope, we won't say anything.
We just ride out the trip and then leave the next day.
Yeah, they just think that Taylor's going to sit there and jerk off to them, masturbating in the shower. No one else will ever see it, because apparently he's never heard of Pornhub. I did remember seeing something where, like, anyway. So, Yeah.
Right. But he's willing to take that chance that it'd be on a Pornhub, because at least there's a chance that his wife would never see it and his brother would never see it.
Yeah, well, who would notice it, right? I mean,
right, there's thousands of stuff on there that it's like, yeah.
So, yeah, what are the odds that somebody they know will see it and mention it?
Right. And we're assuming that it would even be up there too, right? So,
or wherever it is.
Right. Right, exactly.
So, yeah, it basically, you know, it becomes one bad decision, it leads to another one, because then Michelle gets absolutely, you know, wasted on the drugs and wants to go in the hot tub, but the hot tub won't work. And without anyone else knowing, she calls Taylor over to fix it.
Makes sense.
This is around the same time that Reggie, the dog, goes missing.
Dun, dun, dun.
And so Josh is absolutely furious, and he begins to suspect that Taylor, at some point, for some reason, decided to kidnap the dog. And
did he, though?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Did he what, Eric?
Did somebody kidnap the dog, or did the dog just run away?
No. The dog just ran away. But
okay,
but Josh, being the jackass that he is,
thinks Taylor starts.
Yeah, that Taylor kidnapped the dog because.
Oh, okay, yeah. All right.
Which is stupid. And then Mina, who's the hothead that she's been since the beginning of the movie. piece of garbage. She happens to decide to
accuse him of
it. Taylor, yeah. which is ridiculous, because again, even if it is him, they don't want.
Wait,
Josh.
Was it Mina who confronted him, or was it Josh who confronted him? I thought it was Josh who confronted him.
No. Josh. So basically, what happens is Mina confronts Taylor about the footage, and Taylor doesn't know what the hell.
No, about the dog. I thought Josh confronted Taylor about the dog, right?
Yeah, okay. Josh did,
yeah.
Right. Now we're talking about Mina's being a hothead and confronting Taylor about the camera, which goes against Charlie's suggestion, which is let's just drop it and get out of here tomorrow like we're supposed
to. She can't let it go.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then, so Mina and Taylor start struggling because Taylor...
She attacks him.
Yeah, well, because Taylor decides to call the police. Because he's like, okay.
Exactly.
And so suddenly, Josh, thinking that Mina's been attacked, runs into the bathroom and beats Taylor unconscious.
Right.
And now the situation is worse.
Well, this is the whole thing that's stupid, is that the moment Taylor says he'll call the cops, that's a good thing. Right?
Well, because Mina's and is so still stuck in the fucking footage.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but either way, Taylor calling the cops, he's doing the smart thing because he's being accused of something.
Yeah.
There's a camera that isn't supposed to be there.
And it's not his.
And this woman, as we find out
by the end of the film, he didn't do what he's being accused of.
Right. Exactly. And, yeah, then Josh comes in and literally beats him to... probably almost close to a coma. It was pretty bad. It was like
he was unconscious.
It was ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. It was pretty. It was the point where he's going to be in the tank for at least one night, and definitely will have a lot of.
Oh no, well, the thing is, as Charlie points out, the struggle takes place right in front of the cameras in the shower, so they couldn't even argue about self defense.
Right.
That's true too. Right.
Wait, say that again.
So basically, when Josh jumps Taylor and punches him out cold, the fight takes place inside the tub, which is in view of the camera, which Charlie points out that if it had recorded it, they can't argue that the whole thing was in self-defense because it just looks like Josh just jumped this guy.
Right. So in other words, they can't say, make a story up and say Taylor attacked him and was going to do something terrible, and so they were self-defense, and that's why they beat him up.
Well, but the camera didn't catch the whole thing. What was the guy in full clothes doing in the bathtub?
That's what makes it worse. That's what makes it worse, because if they cut the whole thing, then it wouldn't look so bad.
Right, but it's obvious if you're watching it that it didn't catch the whole thing. Why would a guy be in the bathtub with all of his clothes on?
Well, right, the problem here, Mike, the brother had been in prison previously.
Right, and that's
he's
and
already
that's,
got
that's
a record.
The real issue.
Right, and also the second issue, Mike, is the only people that were in the bathroom was Josh and Mina and Tila. So when Charlie says it's all on camera, he doesn't know whether it
well,
is
no,
or
the
not.
Problem is if they the problem is with the cameras, it's also going to reveal their affair.
Right.
Right. We're agreeing that. Yeah.
Right. That's I thought that was his real problem.
No,
that's
but
it started
no,
the whole thing.
That's what started the whole thing. The second thing is what Abe was talking about, which is they couldn't now say if Tila is killed, they can't say that, well, he died during an attack that he did on us because it's all on camera.
Well in other words, there were people there who could say that Taylor started it.
Time out.
You're not understanding what Abe was saying.
Time out. Jesus Christ, guys.
Tonight on Crossfire.
So, regardless of what is actually the truth, they know there's a camera there. They think it belongs to the guy that's now unconscious in the bathtub. So they think that Josh attacking him is footage that will be in Taylor's possession when he comes to. And they don't want to call the cops because Josh has a record, and I think he's on probation, and this would definitely be a violation of his probation.
Right.
Yeah, because he.
Right. But Mike, you're missing Abe's point. You're missing Abe's point. Abe was basically saying that they could make up a story that Taylor attacked them, and they were self-defense. But because everything's on camera of Taylor pounding, getting his ass kicked, the footage.
I understand all of that. What I'm saying is that footage would clearly show what we call the tail end of a fight, and you have five people there, four of whom will likely be able to testify that Taylor started it, or was caused, or that Josh was coming to help
Mina.
To help Mina.
Not if it was all on camera.
It wasn't all on camera.
Yeah, it was.
The point is,
when he was calling, when Taylor was calling 911, that was all in the bathroom, and then Nina attacked him, trying to take away the phone from him. That's on camera.
The camera
and then Josh coming
in the shower. The camera.
Hey Phil, can you text me when the podcast starts again?
The camera catches what's in the shower, and it really isn't relevant to the whole thing. I'm saying that's a weak argument. The real argument with the camera is that it's going to reveal the affair. And the real problem with Josh is the fact that he's already got prior.
Well, because they had mentioned early in the story, Josh had nearly beaten someone to death in a fight.
That's what I said, is that he has a prior.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the real issue. It's not over what the camera recorded about the fight. It's what the camera recorded is that happened the night before in the shower.
I agree. But then they were planning to make up in a story and say Taylor was the bad guy, but then Charlie made a point, which is you can't, because it's all on camera, that Josh did it all.
Yeah, but he's full of shit. The real thing is he doesn't want them finding the camera footage.
No, then he came out and he finally admitted the footage. Didn't he tell them? He came out and says,
no.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No. So basically, so let's move on because we're going to go in circles. Basically,
then how did Michelle find out about the fear then? Because they
the dude that actually installed the camera played the footage on the television upstairs.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Because when everybody's separated.
If we can stop arguing, we can get on to the actual interesting twist in this movie.
Okay, so let's move on. So basically what happens is, at first they think Taylor is just knocked down. While they're arguing about the situation, the real culprit, the one behind everything, the cameras and stuff, sneaks in and finishes Taylor off. They go back and Michelle goes back and check in on him and finds out he's dead. Now they realize they have a dead man in a shower, and the last bit of footage is Josh beating him unconscious, as they're sure of, even though we know that that's not completely true.
Right, so they think Josh killed Taylor, is right. What is the issue is. So now they're saying we can't go to the cops because Josh will go to jail forever because he's already on probation or whatever. So we should cover it up. And Michelle is the only one who doesn't want to do it, but she's so stoned. She really has to – she kind of submits, but she decides that she doesn't want to do it.
Be a part of it, yeah.
Right, because she will be considered guilty for the cover-up if it's ever found out.
Right. And the best – like, I thought one of the best parts of this movie for me personally was the fact that this dude's unconscious in the tub and, like – you think that you finally come to the crux of this, all this drama you've been watching between all these characters, and then this random fucking dude comes into the bathroom and kills him. I'm like, wait, what now? And then he disappears, and it's quite a while before you see him again. So, like, the other characters are all arguing about what they should do. And it's like 10, 15 minutes of them like going around in circles about what they should do before you ever get anything else about the guy that came in and actually killed him. So like you're like, wait, did that happen? Did some random other guy just walk in and kill him? Did I hallucinate that? I really liked it.
Yeah, so now it was funny though is
I was on board. Oh, go on, Abe. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So basically, if we realize now something bigger is going on, but our characters don't realize it. It feels like they're still in the single storyline that they're all involved in, even though they even realize they just step into a serial killer story.
Right.
So, go ahead.
And I was just going to add on to what you just said is that Taylor, as you said earlier, Abe, was a red herring. He was not the villain.
No. But it's funny that they're almost until the very last little few minutes left, no one realizes that. They're all completely right. Still convinced that Taylor was the one who caused all this.
Right. Exactly. I mean, for us, the viewer, I was thinking, all right, was it Taylor's brother? Was it just some random freak or whatever? But the next scene, there's a couple scenes that go on before the killer decides to appear again, and it starts with the video footage of the sex scene that Michelle gets to see. But before we get to that, we have two other scenes, which are Taylor. They're tossing Taylor's body off the cliff into the ocean, and then they'll just say that if
you,
yeah. And you know what's funny is when Josh was on climbing down to knock the body off the rocks, mm-hmm. It's supposed to be really suspenseful, but I wasn't had any suspense at all because I was just hoping it would fall. It was like, I didn't like the guy, so it's like, fall. Come on, fall! So I
like the little bit when they are trying to knock the body off of rocks.
Well,
Charlie managed to do is drop a rock on his head.
Yeah, and they do that. And that's the thing. It's like, I don't like these characters, so I don't want them to get away with it. When Josh goes down to toss the body into the ocean, and there was the suspense that he could fall, I mean, I was like, I don't care. I hope he does fall. So it was just interesting, the whole scenario, because it was more me cheering on them to die rather than for them to get away with the body being tossed into the ocean. So I don't know if that was intentional or not. So I'm thinking it has to be intentional because it was – the film is, I think they really wanted you to hate these characters because this whole scene was kind of dark comedy, right? Because the body doesn't land in the ocean. When they throw rocks at the body, hoping it would knock the body off, instead it just cracks his head open. You know, so it's just kind of black humor at this point.
And then Josh actually does fall and lands right on top of the body.
Right. Exactly.
They get a solid F on their ability to cover up a crime.
Yeah, they are not good murderers.
I mean, here's my thing. They want to make it look like the guy stumbled, fell, and died in the fall. They threw him off a cliff. Who gives a shit where he landed?
Right.
I mean,
that's a fair point. Yeah,
there is also still a good chance forensics could pick up the issue in terms of how he fell, bruises, where what caused the impacts, and whatnot.
Yeah, they'd be able to tell what happened after his death
if they look closely enough.
They also could have checked to find out that he suffocated and not, you know, because he was choked, right?
Well, I'm saying even from their point of view, right? Because they think he's dead because Josh hit him too hard.
Right. So their point of view is even if he didn't fall into the ocean, the rocks is good enough.
Right. But it still was a bad plan. Anyway, it's yeah. And then they're not going to notice these. You know, gee, there's look at all these holes in the ground from these big rocks they've pulled up. Because if anyone here has ever pulled rocks off the ground that are large.
Yeah.
Not to mention all the evidence that Josh loved climbing down there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not going to take Sherlock Holmes to crack this fucking
case. And here's the real problem. Not one of them is drunk or stoned.
Well, except for the one that's not participating.
Right. The one that's not participating is. I'm talking about those three. The three Stooges.
The three Stooges, right. And the thing is, too, is that they are actually thinking that Teal are just disappearing and no one's going to notice. You know, I mean, it's just the whole. I mean, it's just weird. They're the last people to be at the house when Teal is there and then he's gone. So they're just hoping that, oh, it's just he was drunk and he had to stumble and he fell down off the ocean, down into the ocean or something. So I don't know.
It's not a good plan. They're not good murderers.
No. Yeah.
And no one makes them terrible murderers? They didn't even murder somebody.
Right.
They can't even get that right.
Right.
So
they're all going to jail for something they didn't do.
So meanwhile, while they're all out trying to do the body disposal, Michelle's upstairs. She gets lured upstairs by some sounds that she hears. And she keeps on hearing a shower, so she keeps on wandering into the bathrooms. But eventually she figures out it's not the bathrooms, and it's television upstairs that's playing the footage of Charlie and Mina boinking. So she discovers that her husband's been cheating on her, and then goes to leave, and Charlie catches her while she's trying to drive away and thinks that she's leaving because of the murder. And actually finds out that she's leaving because he's a cheater. The last thing she says to him is, because like he's trying to ask her something about getting away with murder. And she just looks at him and says, who are you? and then drives away. Where she proceeds to blow out a tire and then run off the road. And then when she's like investigating her flat tire, discovers that she ran over a spike strip. And I loved that reveal personally. I was like, oh shit, that's not good. And yeah, then she gets attacked. But meanwhile, back at the house, Charlie starts getting text messages from her. But obviously it's not actually her. And then Charlie wanders out into the woods looking for her, calls her phone, sees her phone back in the woods, and starts moving towards it. But that trips over Michelle's dead body and then gets attacked by the unknown murderer.
Now, at this point, I turned to my wife and I said, this is pretty awesome because the two stars, A-listers for this film, are killed off, and we still have like 40 minutes to go or 35 minutes to go. I thought that was pretty awesome because that was unexpected. And not that myself or my wife were big fans of either of these these actors or actress, because we didn't watch Mad Men and we didn't, you know, whatever. But I knew enough about them that they were pretty big, and that was why people were interested in the film possibly. So it was pretty cool. I think that was an awesome twist.
Yeah.
Killing them off. Yeah. And it was kind of bummer for Michelle, because I like Michelle. She did nothing wrong.
Yeah, but, you know, wrong place, wrong time. And meanwhile, back at the house, Mina and Josh are trying to find the footage. And earlier in the movie, we forgot to mention this at the beginning, but they had discovered this door with an electronic keypad on it under the porch. Sorry, deck, I guess it would be called.
It's like a storage unit or something, right?
Well, they don't know what's in there because it's locked.
Right, no, but I mean, if you were just a random person that saw it, you would just assume it was, right? This is a horror film. You wouldn't something see worse. It
because it's under the deck. It's not supposed to be seen, but they find it anyway. Why were they? Did they get under there when they were looking for the dog?
It's not a type of deck you think. You can actually walk under the deck.
No, I get that. I'm saying it's not like designed to be out in the open. That's all.
Oh, right. But it's not like a crawl space is what I mean.
No. You can stand up in there, but it's not like on the deck, right?
Right. It's basically a part of the house that would be used for storage, most likely that a renter would have no interest in.
Except for these renters who discovered it earlier and were bummed that the code 666 did not open it.
Right. And we know it's a horror film, so we know it must be a movie. But that was a red herring too, wasn't it?
It was. They bust in there looking for the footage. One thing that they didn't – I like paused it to see if you can see, and you can't.
Oh, yeah, pictures, yeah.
Like, the dude finds a handful of Polaroids in there and goes, oh. And she's like, what is it? And he's like, you don't want to know. So I'm like, wait, what the fuck is that?
It was Tales in Paris and Christmas photos.
They're Polaroids, so I'm assuming it's something naughty. And was it Taylor? Was it his brother? Like, ooh, there's another story there, but I'll let it go.
Yeah, well, and they never show the pictures, right?
Right. You don't know what they are, but
yeah, and that's a little creepy. And I mean, maybe they're just like personal sex pictures or something.
Right. Maybe. So they're looking for the footage without much luck. And then,
yeah, they're thinking there may be like a computer set up in there or something.
At one point, no, they were expecting to find that, but they don't.
Yeah, right.
Mina goes and at some point is like, I forget exactly what the sequence is. Mina ends up upstairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, Josh gets a text from what he thinks is Charlie.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's an audio of Mina and Charlie at the dinner at the table in the morning, talking about not wanting to let it happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts interrogating Mina, like, "What's this about?" Until he gets another message from "quote unquote" Charlie, and it's actually the video in the shower. And he goes completely ballistic, and he starts trying to hunt down his brother, thinking his brother's fucking messing with him. And as soon as, and then suddenly he gets completely, he meets Hammer Time.
Well, he also is looking for Mina too, right? Because he's pissed at her too.
No, Mina's upstairs just sitting there upset because, you know, Josh found out.
Mm-hmm. Right. But that's why he goes upstairs, right? Because he thinks Charlie and Mina are going to be upstairs in the house and he can go talk to them and say, what the fuck?
No. He
confronts Mina about it, right?
Yeah, Josh gets the messages while with Mina.
Right.
And then runs off to go hunt down Charlie, and that's when he gets taken out.
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah, with the hammer.
Right.
Hammer Time.
Right. Yeah. So he's gone. And then we have our final girl, and I predicted what was going to happen. I couldn't believe I got it. I said it. I told my wife, I go, you know what? She's going to run off. It's foggy. She's going to run off the cliff. And I could not believe this is the first film ever that I pinpointed perfectly. I don't know how I did it. And I was so happy.
I did like her attempt to get away, though. She was better than most.
Yeah.
She gave it the good old college try. There was some subterfuge, some running away, some fighting back, and then some more running away, and she ran a little too far.
I, I, I almost woke up the kids because, you know, at this point it was like 10 at night. I screamed, yes! I hated her character. I was like, yes, they're all dead! I think this is the first horror film. I've had many horror films that I had no problems characters dying off. But most of those films, it was because I just hated the films. This is the first film I actually liked that I wanted characters to die.
Well, another thing that Dan said during this movie, when they brought the dog, he was like, oh, God damn it, they're going to fucking torture and kill the dog, aren't they?
I said the same thing. I said, I can't believe the dog's dead. Oh, I actually texted you, Eric. I said, oh, my God, there's a dog. He's dead.
Yeah.
And you'll notice I didn't reply. So, yeah. At the very end of the movie, all the people have been killed, and this random murderer wanders around the house gathering all his little spy cameras. There's one in the shower. And we saw earlier through different points of view, there's many spy cameras all over the house. And he goes and he collects them all and is just standing in the living room. And the dog comes wandering into the living room. And he reaches down and he almost pets it, but the dog shies away from him a little bit. And so he like just stands back up and the dog wanders out the back door and the dude leaves. And then that's it. We see a bunch of footage at the end of this movie, just kind of showing that this dude isn't done yet.
Yeah, he's doing other houses.
That he's going around and he's setting up cameras in all sorts of other places, and this won't be his last murder.
We see him with a realtor rented another place, so so they can set up the cameras and do the same thing most likely to these other places.
Right, he rents a place, he copies the key, and he sets up the cameras, and then he leaves the place and spies on whoever's next. And apparently he's just going to do this over and over and over and over again. And the last thing we see is him approaching somebody to murder them, and that's it. I read somewhere that this was actually inspired partially by the Golden State Killer, particularly that shot in the end where he's just standing in the middle of the living room, because apparently the Golden State Killer used to do shit like that. Like after he did his horribleness, he would go in the kitchen and have a fucking sandwich. So it was at least partially inspired by that. Right.
Yeah, I did like how it was always all the people in the cameras during the credits, they're all young folk too. So it was like people under 40. So I think we're all set, except for Abe. Abe, you're all done.
I'm almost in my 30s, so I'll be okay.
Yeah, you'll be all right. So, that was an interesting ending because you didn't know if they were going to have survivors or not. Once they killed off the two leads, or big names, I should say, then I figured they were all going, but I wasn't sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then when Josh went, I said, okay, she's done. I couldn't believe they would have her character, the most miserable SOB, be the final girl. So I'm thinking, okay, she's going to die. And then I predicted it. I have to pat myself in the back again. I predicted how she was going to die. Not that she was going to die, but how she was going to die.
Well, you can pat yourself if you want. Just don't put it on Pornhub.
That's right. even though their video is going to be on Pornhub, you're dead too.
No, I like movies where everybody dies because it doesn't happen very often. You don't very often get a movie where everybody dies.
Exactly.
Like, I think Cabin Fever is one I remember where everybody died.
Yeah.
There aren't very many. I can't think of another one off the top of my head.
The Thing.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's
implied they all die.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, these young people films where, you know, teenagers or 20-something, 30-somethings, usually there's always a final person. But this one, all croaked.
Yep.
It was good.
So, yeah, I like that.
I also like that we don't know why the villain did it and how he got in place at this rental house, too.
We never see him because he's wearing like an old guy mask when he's attacking everybody. But yeah. Even like the last 10, 15 minutes, he takes, like, I enjoyed the deliberateness with which it was done. He takes the mask off, but we still don't see his face. Then we see him from behind, and we still don't see his face. And we never see his face.
And when he's with the realtor, they only show him from behind, too, yeah.
Right. So I enjoyed the deliberate intention there.
Yeah, me too. So it was a pretty solid thriller/horror/slasher film. Even if it isn't 100% original, it was still enough that it deserved the buzz it's been getting.
Yeah.
I think.
So I think Phil and I are stronger on it than Abe and Mike, but I think we can all agree it was, at the very least, a competently made film.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was competent. I mean, I think the main thing here is that if these people were less shitty, then it would have been over much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That they wouldn't have been banging in the shower and they maybe wouldn't have been calling the guy a racist, and maybe the guy might not have been a racist and maybe would have accepted Mina's thing in the first place, and they could have gotten to the bottom of the camera thing, you know, pretty quickly, or not had any trouble calling the police right away, and maybe they could have caught this fucking asshole right at the beginning of the film. Basically, these were all just terrible people, and because they were terrible people, it's what got them all killed.
People suck.
But to be fair, I mean, they're this is going to reinforce my theory that people suck. They're realistic bad people. It's not like they're super villains. They're just they just suck, as people will do.
Shallow people who don't have any empathy. They're selfish. That type.
And like, I don't think any of them, even though we can all agree that everybody except Michelle's an asshole. I don't think any of them have evil intention.
We all agree Michelle's an asshole?
No.
I said we all agree everybody except Michelle's an asshole.
Except Michelle's an asshole. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think Charlie was like, haha, I'm going to go on this weekend and cheat on my wife. You know, Josh didn't go on this weekend and haha, I'm going to beat somebody unconscious. and Mina wasn't like, aha, I'm going to be totally passive aggressive and even in my against my own best interests.
You know what type they are? They're the type of, like, the yuppie scum, basically.
Yeah, they're not villains, they're just shitty people. The kind you run into every day.
Well, and it's also, you know, it depends on the circumstances. You know, it's we all have, it's like, for example, Mina. Mina just happened to latch onto a theory, one that is not entirely unfounded, that she couldn't let go of.
Good thing I don't know anybody like that.
Yeah, and then, you know, couldn't be talked out of it, and then the guy that she dealt with didn't handle it either, right?
Right. Yeah, when he got called white trash, he was pissed.
Implied white trash.
Right. Yeah, basically, she was insulting to him, and he knew what she was doing.
And by the way, you don't have to be white trash to not be able to afford that place.
That's correct.
But if someone looked at you or me or Abe or Eric, I don't think anyone would say we were white trash. But I think they probably would be surprised if any one of the four of us owned that place.
Right.
Well, because they know our professions or how we live or whatever. But this person, you can have all these, you know, people that dress like bums that are filthy rich. I mean, I know a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's being totally judgmental with that. And he's he's being kind of judgmental about the, what do you need a telescope for in the city? You're just peeping Toms.
Right.
Right. But this was already after he was pissed at them.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. They're all being dicks to each other. And so that didn't help.
He was going to ride them all the way until they left. Once he was insulted.
Right, and her being what she was being, and him being the dick he was being, then poisons the minds of the other people, which allows you to get into that conflict later where the guy dies. They all walked away from the guy knocked out in the bathtub. I don't know why they did that, rather than trying to get him medical help, which allows the killer to kill him.
Yeah.
And then they just all show that none of them has apparently ever watched a real crime drama at some point, because they are terrible at covering up a crime.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was so bad.
Yeah. They pretty much fucked it up in every way possible.
Yeah. This ain't the Philly Irish mob or the Italian mob or whatever. These are just morons. And it was just ridiculous. So the thing is, too, is that Mike pretty much summed it up. Yeah, you were right.
It all happens because they're terrible people. Now, I don't know why this guy...
The psycho, you mean?
The psycho, right, was doing all of this. We get nothing about him, unlike, you know, most slasher-type characters running around in a mask and killing people, where you usually get some backstory.
Yeah, right.
You know, like Jason Voorhees or the guy in The Burning. Mm-hmm. Even Michael Myers, you know, we just get he was born evil. We get a whole soliloquy about how he was... The blackness of his eyes.
Yeah.
Like doll's eyes. They roll... Oh, no, wait, that's the shark. But yeah, so here he is a complete cipher. He is, you know, he's a guy in a mask,
a Deus ex machina,
and that's it. He's there to deliver justice. And I don't even know the point of the ending montage, other than to give some context if you needed explanation.
Right. Well, you could tell that the only thing it let me know about him was that it was younger yuppies that he was doing it to. Now, in other words, he's paying, he's punishing bad people, as Eric would say. But
naughty.
But you're right. It's not enough information to let us know exactly.
We don't know that they're bad people. He's punishing people who can afford. He's renting out these houses.
I don't think he's punishing people. He's just killing people.
Right. Yeah, and why?
I think you're right.
He's renting out the houses. He's setting up the cameras. And then killing, I'm guessing, the next people to come in. Now, is he doing it for his own entertainment? Is this it's like something he's filming and selling the footage on the dark web?
Right.
You know, so we don't really get any of that. And other than the fact that it's to show that it's not the brother who's been murdering everybody, the one who actually owned the...
Right. It wasn't the brother. Right.
The thing, then I don't know that there's really a point to this. I don't know if
point is just to let you know he's still out there and he's still doing it.
Right. Well, we had
to pause it. Me and my wife had to pause it because we actually, at one point, I had the theory that I bet you Taylor has nothing to do with it. The brother is a wealthy psycho. And then when the brother dies, when Taylor dies, I had to stop the thing. I go, you know what? I don't think it's the brother. My wife goes, why not? Because why would he kill his brother? And she goes, you never know. I go, but why would he kill his brother now? And he didn't do it like in a prior murder, you know? And so that we were deciphering it as we were going, that's for sure. So I think you're right, Mike. It was to show that he wasn't the brother of Taylor. And what you said, Eric, that it shows that he just keeps on doing it.
Mm-hmm. And I think the point is supposed to be that there's no reason.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be the most frightening part. It's supposed to be the lack of knowing can be more maddening than the knowledge you get from something.
Right. I mean, we know why, in the sense that he's just an evil prick, right? I mean, to kill people is evil, even if the people you're killing are lousy people. But we don't know why he decides to do it. We just know that he's doing it because he's evil. I mean, you can say that if you're killing these people, you must be evil. Is that right to say? Right? I'm right to say that, right?
In this particular instance, yes. I don't think all murder is unjustified. I'll say that. But in this particular case, yes, I would agree with that statement. If somebody rapes your daughter and you kill them, I got no problem with that.
Sure. Oh, right. Well, this guy's not doing it for any vengeance.
Right. That's what I'm saying. In this case, yes.
Yeah. He's just murdering because he likes it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Some people collect stamps.
Right.
And those people should be killed.
Some people murder.
Yes.
Everybody needs a hobby.
This guy. I guess so. But the dog lived. That was a surprise, too. That was a good surprise.
It was a surprise that the dog lived.
Yeah. So the question is, did the dog get kidnapped, or did the dog just, like the idiots, the dog escaped? You know,
I think it just ran away because she forgot to bring him in.
That's what I'm thinking, too. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah, that's another thing about Mina. That pissed me off, too. She, like, irresponsible. She said, yeah, I'll take care of the dog, and then she didn't. It's like, you stink.
That is true.
That's another reason I was hoping she would be chucked off the cliff. Imagine that, losing the dog. That's terrible.
I still don't know for sure, because this guy's behind the scenes fucking around with them or watching them from the beginning. So I don't know if he let the dog loose or the dog got loose on his own, and it really doesn't matter.
Right.
Because he didn't hurt the dog.
Right.
You know, and the dog, of course, you cut the dog loose, he could, you know, could have gone away on his own. That's all he really needed to do, is to sow a little bit of chaos.
Right. That's true. Yeah. So whether the dog was cut loose by the guy, or if it was just because Mina was an idiot, it caused more division and chaos in this group of four people.
Yeah.
So it worked to the plot. I don't know. I think it was, I don't think the guy had anything to do with the dog. Just a guess. But
yeah, I don't think
I have nothing to back it up. Yeah. I think just Mina was a dumbass, and the dog was inconsequential to the guy's plan. But to have the dog not around does help him, because there's no barking.
True. You know, that's true.
My dog would have been barking at the guy, like, who the hell's this? Get out of here. So, and I'm sure Abe's dogs do the same. So, yeah. Any other scenes? What's that?
I think we covered everything.
You said my dog's barking at anything?
Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if they see her or someone, or see a stranger or something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So the dog, the pug disappearing actually helped the murderer, because he got rid of the dog. The dog was out of the picture and wouldn't be barking at him when he was sneaking around.
Reggie did nothing wrong.
By the way, Abe, how's your dog, by the way?
Oh, he's doing better. Finn's just, you know, very sporadic. He's a lot more energetic. He's really doing well. I think he's doing, I mean, we've been giving his insulin, and he's been eating well. So I'm just glad he's feeling better.
Excellent. Now, any other scenes that we wanted to talk about that we missed, or pieces of the film that anybody wanted to talk about?
No, it really is a surprisingly straightforward movie.
Yeah. When you think about it, I mean, it has twists, but you're right. I could agree with that statement, Mike. All right. So I guess we can get into what we've been watching, or news or anything like that. Let's see. I've been playing. I finished Doom Eternal, so now I'm just waiting for downloadable content whenever that comes out, because it still hasn't been released yet. So now I'm playing this video game called Daymare 1996, I think it's called. And it's like a Resident Evil. It's really good. It's only $20. It's by an independent company out of Italy. What they did was, they were making a game that was supposed to be a spinoff to Resident Evil, and then Capcom called them up and told them to stop and desist. However, they said, please continue making your game, just make sure that it's not Resident Evil, because they were trying to make a play to be the developers for the sequel to one of the Resident Evils. They wanted to make Resident Evil 2 remake, and Capricorn said, no, we usually just do it internal, but, you know, good shot for trying and make the, you know, the game you want. Just make sure it's not Resident Evil. So it's basically Resident Evil 1 and 2 and 3, but nothing to do with Resident Evil, if that makes sense. So if you like Resident Evil games, Daymare 1996.
It's generic Resident Evil in the black and white package.
Yeah.
It honestly is, absolutely. And they admit it, and Capcom, like I said, had to tell them to stop. They actually flew them to Japan and wined and dined them for a week just because they respected them for what they were doing and the quality of what they did. And they thought they were going to either – they were hoping to get the deal to make the sequel, but they didn't. However, they didn't get nixed. They were shocked that they didn't get nixed. Instead, they said, make the game, and we'll help you promote it, but just make sure it's not Resident Evil. So that was kind of cool. So it's a nice story. So if you like generic Walmart cola, it's good.
And what's the name of this again?
It's called Daymare. So D-A-Y-M-A-R-E, so like nightmare, but it's Daymare. 1996, I think. It has a year after it. Yeah. So check it out.
Are you playing that on your PC or your console?
I'm playing on Xbox. You can get it on Xbox. Yeah. So I highly recommend there. So if you like the original Resident Evils, but much better graphics, it's a game to definitely play. Let's see what else. I watched Aqua Slash, which is a horror slasher type film. It's pretty good. Like, if you like stuff like Piranha 3D and stuff like that, you'll like the slasher, Aqua Slash, because it's similar craziness of that. So, pretty good film. It's out of Canada. So I saw that, and I saw a film called...
You used the C word again.
I did. And then I saw a film called Dead. Well, it's supposed to take place in Pennsylvania, but they, yeah, it's really a Canadian film. And then I saw a film called Dead Sound, which is supposed to be Long Island Sound, but they call it Dead Sound. It takes place out of New London, Connecticut. It's about a party that's on Block Island, and so a bunch of kids are going to try to take the boat to Block Island, but they miss the boat, so they have to hook up with some fishermen to get them over there, and some stuff happens. It's kind of it's a weird film for the first half hour, because it's like kind of a fratty dark comedy, and then it turns into a really good thriller the last hour. So highly recommend on that. I know Leo Pond of the Dorkening actually interviewed the filmmakers for that, though I had no idea. I actually we randomly found it on Amazon Prime, me and my wife, and it's actually on my list of films that came out this year too. And my wife liked the trailer, so we watched that, and she liked the film too. We saw a film with Thomas Jane and what's that woman's name? The one that used to date. Was married to Lou Diamond Phillips, and then she started dating Ellen DeGeneres.
Anne Hesh?
Anne Hesh, thank you. Yeah, so Anne Hesh and Thomas Jane in a film called The Vanished, brand new thriller slash horror film. My wife really liked it. I thought it was pretty decent. I didn't like it as much as her. Big twist. And then when the twist was beginning, I picked it up. I said, oh, this is what it's going to be. And I kind of was right. So I'm proud that I got that one, too. So The Vanished, if you like thrillers, that's definitely worth checking out. It's brand new. Action's pretty solid. It's a weird film, though, the screenplay. And I saw You Should Have Left with Kevin Bacon and Amanda Seyfried. And that was really good. I think both you, Eric, and Chrissy will definitely like it. I See You. I saw that film with Helen Hunt, and that was pretty good. Actually, it was really good, I felt. A thriller with a big twist at the end that makes you think it's going to be a supernatural film, but it may or may not be. I won't give it away anything. And then me and my wife actually saw another Helen Hunt film that just came out, and that was called The Night Clerk. And that actually has a pretty good cast, too. It has Ty Sheridan from a number of genre films, as well as John Leguizamo and Ana de Armas. And that one had a big twist, too. So if you like thrillers, that's definitely one to check out as well. So most of these films that I've seen was because of my wife. Because like I told Mike the other night when we were doing the Lovecraft podcast, I actually really only get to see one film a week. For you know this podcast here, and if I see any other films, it's because it's movie night with my wife, and that's pretty much it for me. What about you, Eric? What do you got?
I haven't been watching a whole lot because Madden 21 came out this week, so I spent a number of hours doing that. But I did. I watched. It was an indie film called The Pale Door. And I have mixed feelings about it because I think it was directed by Aaron B. Kuntz. No idea if it's in relation to the author, Dean. Probably not. But I hope he does more horror movies because he's got the right idea. This movie, the script was kind of ambitious, and I just don't think he had the budget to pull it off because it's an ensemble film with like eight characters, but he only had like two really strong actors.
What's the name of this film again?
It's called The Pale Door, and it's supposed
that's a brand new film.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a Western, but like it doesn't. And I guess this is probably more on me and my expectations, but it doesn't follow the typical Hollywood. It's supposed to be a Western, but it doesn't follow the Western tropes. Like at one point they're in a town and they have a gun duel. But one of the guys is wearing like a bright striped vest and they're in a street that has grass on it. So it's not like your typical brown Western town with the dust swirling, which is what I expect from a Western. And some of the set design didn't really look old timey enough. So it was a swing and a miss in my opinion. It wasn't horrible, but it was a miss. But I really hope he gets the chance to do more. Cause I think like if he'd had triple the budget, this would have been a really good movie. And that's really all I've watched other than stuff I've been podcasting about.
Is it worth as an episode, do you think?
Nah.
All right, fair enough. All right, what about you, Mike?
The only thing that I've watched of interest, I watched on Netflix, I watched The Pool, which is a film from Thailand. And it's kind of billed as an alligator flick. Crocodile flick. There is a crocodile in the film, but spoiler warning, the crocodile doesn't actually kill anybody. He does some damage, but he's one of many factors. It's much more of a survival horror film. It is, if we remember the old horror, etc. days, the horror film set in one location. Well, that's category. The basic idea is that there's a guy who is stuck in a swimming pool. It's a drained swimming pool that has no shallow end, and he can't get out. You have to watch the film to understand the reasons. And then an alligator kind of falls in the pool with him. And so he has to both find a way out of the pool, and he has to find a way to survive the alligator. There is a dog in the movie. The alligator does not kill the dog. So don't worry about that. I enjoyed it. I'd be curious what other people thought about it. The other thing I started watching, because the DVDs were cheap.
Oh, Mike, would it be worth an episode?
It might be. There is some symbolism in it. So maybe Chrissy would pick up on that. I don't know. You might want to watch it and tell me what you think.
And this is on Shudder, you said?
It is on Shudder. It came out, I think, two years ago. What
was that? Oh, it's an older film, okay. So it's not a new one. I won't put it on my new list, though. Okay.
It was available briefly at some point on Amazon. And like as soon as I found out about it, I put it on my wish list to watch on Amazon. And then when I went to go back and see it, it was gone. So it wasn't on there very long, or it had been on there for a while and just hadn't gotten any publicity. I don't know what it was. But yeah, I liked it. I would check it out if you have any interest in a film like that. And the other thing I've been watching, again, being a comic book nerd, is the it was done for the DC streaming service. Is the TV series Swamp Thing, and I'm not referring to the 1990s TV series. Right. This was a new one. It was made about 2 years ago, or a year ago. And
the one that was on DC, right?
Yeah, it was on DC, and yeah, whether or not there's going to be a second season hasn't still been decided. It is very definitely in the horror category. There's a scene in the first episode that feels like it could have come right out of The Thing. It isn't completely over the top in terms of horror, but they're also, because it was done for a streaming service, they aren't beholden to normal TV restrictions. It is very much going more in the Alan Moore, Bernie Wrightson vein than the Wes Craven film. So they finally seem to have nailed the tone right. I've only gotten through the first couple of episodes, but I am enjoying it so far.
Yeah, very good. Oh, Eric, sorry to interject here, Mike. You actually rewatched The Boys?
The first season, yes.
Yep. And you like that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because the new season's coming out in September.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, what else you got? Sorry to...
No, that was about it.
I just remember. Okay, very well. And what about you, Abe? Anything you got?
I was in busy with work, but I did manage to get the 50th anniversary collection disc set of Night of the Living Dead.
Anniversary collection? Oh.
Was that the Criterion one? Or?
Yeah, it comes with the Criterion DVD.
Oh, you got... is it a Blu-ray or the DVD?
Yeah, it's a Blu-ray.
I got that. Okay.
Yeah, it comes with two discs. It comes with a poster... the graphic novel, which has all hand-painted pages, also lobby cards, and a case to carry everything.
I haven't opened mine yet, believe it or not.
You really? This has been in there?
Yeah, I bought it like when it came out, and I haven't opened it. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's continue though. Really cool though. I'm looking through the graphic novel, and that's really awesome. It's really awesome. It's really, impressive that the artist, I forgot his name off the top of my head, but he hand painted every single panel, and it's really really creates a nice little haunted atmosphere with this for this adaptation to it's in the graphic novel format. The DVD has a lot of extra features on both discs. It's really cool. I also ordered the adaptation of the novelization of The Night of the Living Dead as well, which was written by the co-writer who worked with Romero in
Russo?
The... Russo, yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, that was all I was managed to do. I just been busy with a lot of work, but... that's what happened on my end.
All right, very good. All right, so before we get into our final thoughts on The Rented, Eric, can you do another podcast with your buddy Dan? The Rental, that's right, that's what I said.
I thought you said Rented.
I'm just...
Abe, you heard him say Rental, right? I heard him say Rental.
Don't cover up for him. I do a general interest podcast with my buddy Dan. It is called the Askansty Podcast. That's spelled ASKANCITY. You can find it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And Eric, me, you, Mike. Oh, actually, there's no reason for me to say that because this is Dr. Discussions Podcast. Sorry, never mind. I don't know what I'm talking about. So, Mike, me, you, Kevin, and Barrett do another podcast.
Yeah, we do the Gaslighting Eric podcast. No, I'm sorry. We do the Travel Guide to Lovecraft Country, which is based on the TV show Lovecraft Country, which has aired two episodes. The third episode will air this Sunday night, and a couple of days later, we will be having an episode out about that.
Excellent. Now,
quick question for you on that. On the Slash Filmcast, they've been talking about that show in passing, and what they're saying is that there is a huge disparity between the pilot and the second episode. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think the first episode is much better. It's also not unusual for a pilot to have a much higher budget because, the second episode has a lot of weight.
Okay. Cool.
And so the question is it's a bit of a mess. And I think narratively, it's not horrible. It kind of hangs together. It just gets there in an ugly way. And I just don't know.
It's not as well written either. Yeah.
Right. Is that going to be, or as well edited either? And the question is this a necessary evil we had to do to get out of the way and move on to better things? Or is this going to be what more of the show is going to be like? And we will see.
Okay, cool.
Right,
it's consensus.
Yeah. Is it going to be uneven? It is consensus. Yeah. Right, even people who have commented on the post about the episode that we did, me and Mike did, has basically said the exact same thing that everybody else is thinking. Yeah.
All right.
Now I remember what I was going to have you mention, Erica. Me, you, and Mike do another podcast that Sean Baker, the Academy Award director, actually liked and he started following us for. What is that podcast?
Well, he liked to tweet. I don't know if he likes the podcast. I don't know if he's listened to the podcast. But that podcast is called Cinema a la Carte. And it is where the three of us discuss movies that don't fall under the Dark Discussions umbrella. So we are trying to do that monthly. We've recorded a few of them. It's up to Phil now. So hopefully we'll keep going on a monthly basis. We kind of rotate, and each one of us chooses a movie to do an episode on, and we just kind of go in a circle. We just recorded one that I chose it was earlier this week. God, time means nothing anymore. next time we'll be choosing one that Mike picked.
Yeah, and just keep tuning in because eventually Phil will pick Striptease.
No. Actually, that would be a fun episode to do. But no. I got a decent list of good films that are Phil films, and Striptease is got a lot of nice eye candy, but it's not really a Phil film. Even though I don't think it's as bad as everybody thought it was. It's still a good grindhouse B movie, midnight movie, even if it's not my type of film necessarily. Also, what was I going to say, Eric, about that? Yeah, I've been getting them out monthly now. So Baby Driver came out last month. This month, Starlet came out. And next month, or in the next couple of weeks, your last prior choice is going to be coming out.
Yeah, so we got four more in the can already, right?
Yeah, we got one, two. Well, the one we just did, we have three in the can. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, four. You're right. Yeah, we got four in the can. Yep.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, I forgot the one I suggested. The best film ever.
Well, we've got Ishtar, Jason, Gilly,
Striptease,
Heaven's Gate. Yeah.
That's the same.
Don't encourage him, Mike.
No, none of those films will be my choices. Yeah. Actually, most of the films that I'll be choosing are films that you guys would probably like, actually. Yeah, Starlet was a different type of film, but most of the other ones are thrillers that I have on my list. All right, so let's give our final thoughts thoughts on this film here. So let's. I guess I'll start. Since I began, I think this film is really good. The characters are there to hate, and there's a lot of twists, or enough twists to make it interesting. There's enough things that make it different. And as a result, I felt it was a good hour and 28 minute thriller / slasher film that you may enjoy. I think most people who listen to the podcast will probably like it generally. So, yeah, thumbs up and recommend. Let's go with you, Abe.
I think this is a, you know, I'm kind of mixing the film. I thought the performance was very, very strong. I did like twists. I think it was really kind of cool to kind of shift from one sort of, situation to the next. An escalation of just poor decisions on the character's part. Whether you see it as a positive or negative, that's going to, I think, vary from the viewer. But that was, I think, one of the strengths of the film. Even if I didn't care for the characters. And if the first chunk of the film is not exactly all that thrilling. It's mostly to set up this, everything else that falls, but... You know, it comes kind of a chore depending on how you feel about the characters. I can still say that if you like thrillers, I think it's worth checking out. Doesn't really do anything too new, aside from a little bit towards the end where it shifts a bit. But overall, it's not a terrible film, and the rental is available to rent. On Amazon, as far as I know, that's one source, or the only source it's available on. There might be others. But if you're kind of wearing the price of renting it, because you're not sure how the film would be for you, maybe just wait a while. Otherwise, give it a shot.
All right, very good. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, it's slow for the first 45 minutes, which, again, for a 90-minute movie is a lot of the film. And I think I think it picks up a lot at the end, and I enjoyed the ending. I think it was well directed. I thought it was well acted. The characters are shit, but I think they're kind of meant to be. Or at least I hope they were meant to be. So, we told you what we think. If those are parameters that are acceptable to you, then check it out. Although I probably would wait for it to end up on a free streaming service somewhere rather than just, throw your disposable cash at it.
All right. Eric.
I have no problem throwing my disposable cash at this movie. I thought it was quite good. And I would recommend it. And I'm not against paying for it.
All right. Very good. So once again, this is 2020 film. A lot of good indie folk behind the film. It was called The Rental. Directed by the younger Franco, I think his name's David Franco, right? And stars Dan Stevens, Allison Brie, among others. It's readily available for rent or purchase wherever video on demand or digital is available. And check it out if you agree with me and Eric. So with that stated, Eric.
All right, thanks for tuning in. Let's talk about The Rental. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.